for the invitation more than a year ago, but yeah, my response time is of the order of a year, so at last I'm here. Let me make two remarks before I start to talk proper. One remark to warn you, and the other remark to comfort you. So the first warning is that this is not so much, I thought, about quantum gravity. I know nothing about quantum gravity, frankly speaking. But somehow I think that the topic of cosmological constants and microscopic theory would then be appropriate for this seminar series. The second remark is that we got an email today to remind us of the talk, and that email looked very frightening, with an incredible abstract. In that abstract, originally I had paragraphs, right? So now it is one big lump, a huge lump, rather indigestible, and it starts with a brief introduction. And this is like these books, you know, in German, you have a brief introduction to the theory of blub, and that is 12 volumes. So it will not be like that, I hope. So this is to comfort you. It will hopefully not be as massive and indigestible as the abstract without paragraphs suggests. Okay. That having said, I have also changed the title slightly to cosmological constant problem. That's more or less clear to you what that means. Q theory, that is most likely not clear to you, I will explain it to you, and new TV scale physics, that is of course not clear if that exists at all. So this is what I will discuss. Now, stand there. Yeah. So let's not be modest, and let's be brave and really discuss what we may call the biggest problem of modern physics, that's cosmological constant problem. And it's really the biggest problem, because, first of all, the magnitude of the problem is huge, namely what we sort of expect theoretically over what we measure experimentally. We are wrong by at least 40 orders of magnitude. So we are really wrong, right? We really don't understand anything from it. And the other reason why it is a really big problem is that it's the object that we discuss has the size of the universe. Now, bigger than that is not possible. So this is really a big problem, but what is the problem? Now, the problem is actually rather subtle, and so I will just try to phrase it in two lines, which is not a perfect phrasing, and there's this standard review by Weinberg, already 20 years old, but it's very still up to date, that I would say the following. The cosmological constant problem is the question why the zero-point energy of the vacuum does not produce naturally a large cosmological constant in the Einstein field equations. That is how I would formulate it. And originally, this problem of the zero-point energy, why doesn't the zero-point energy gravitate, that already worried Pauli in the 1930s. He also made back-of-the-envelope estimates that this was dramatically wrong, that he would have universes of the size of an apple, this kind of thing. He did that already on the back of the envelope. In the modern context, that means the standard model, I would say that one of the persons that is the first to really resurface this problem is Tini Feldman in 1970, roughly. And he understood that the problem is really the naturally. That is why I have naturally here. It can be, if you have something that is constant, you can always ad hoc cancel it. That is possible. But the question is, does that require fine-tuning? And if you have a solution that requires fine-tuning, as a physicist, we are doubtful if that is the true solution, right? And so this question that it is naturally absent, how do you understand that? I think Feldman was the first. That is in a paper that is actually not published, that was killed by the referee. It is available as a preprint at CERN, and the referee suggested to write a rather silly paper about something trivial. Okay, that is what is the published version. But the naturalness, that is in the preprint version, and I think he was one of the first to realize that. Okay, so this is the cosmological constant problem. Why doesn't the zero-point energy of all the fields we have in the vacuum, why don't they gravitate And we want to understand that why that happens naturally, so no fine tuning. Let's really make sure that we have a problem to discuss. It's not, our lifetime is limited, say of the order of 100 years, to be optimistic. We don't want to waste our time doing something that is no problem. So let's look at something that we think we know something about. It's called QCD. Now we know that QCD involves vacuum energy densities, and we measure that indirectly through the gluon condensate or through the Beck constant. And these energy densities in QCD are of the order of 100 MeV to the fourth. If I multiply it out, I get 10 to the 32 electron volt to the fourth. Right? These are the energies that go around in QCD, and QCD is a theory that describes to a high degree of accuracy what we know of the strong interactions. Well, actually, the gluon condensate is measured indirectly through these sum rules, right? So these are the energy densities that are around in the theory. And the measured value of the gluon condensate is of the order of 300 MeV brackets around to the fourth. That's, mind you, there's still huge error bars on it, huh? But these are the energy densities we have in QCD. And the Beck constant also, in a way, you measure, right? So it is really 100 GeV, 100 MeV to the fourth, or GeV to the fourth. These are the energies, right? That is not really the main pain problem. The real pain problem is that we basically know that these energy densities change with time. They are not constant, because as the temperature of the universe drops, these energies will respond to this temperature. At very high energies, we expect not to have confinement. At low energy, we have confinement. At very high energies, we have chiral symmetry, which is then spontaneously broken. So this is a problem where typical energies of the order of 100 MeV to the fourth, but they change with time. So I cannot simply add a constant to get rid of it, right? That is the point. So these are energy densities that we have. They change with time. And then is the question, how can it be that at the present universe, whatever comes out is certainly less than 10 to the minus 10 electron volt to the fourth? That we know. This is very, this even factor 10, I grant you here. The energy density in some vacuum energy density is certainly less than 10 to the minus 28 grams per cubic centimeter. And that are precisely 42 orders of magnitude to explain. So there is really a problem. There is really a problem. Okay. Not only that, after the discovery of what is called the accelerating universe, which was indeed a major discovery, after it was confirmed over the coming over the decade after it, we have not only one cosmological constant problem, we have several. And so the first one I repeat, so why is this value of the cosmological constant much less than these typical energies that we know to the force? Why is this so less? But now comes the problem, why is it not zero exactly? And not only that, why is the precise value of the order of the matter density that we have now? So why is that number of the order of 10 to the minus 11 electron volt to the fourth, right? So first, why is it very small? Why is it not zero? And why is it this number, right? That is the big problem. Now, there have been hundreds of papers, possibly thousands, published on these finer cosmological constant problems having to do with dark energy. And many of these papers are very interesting, no question about it. But I would say that we first need to solve the main cosmological constant problem before you can even start to address the finer problems. Right? This would be sort of, it seems to me obvious that if you don't understand why it is 10 to the, say, 100 electron volt to the fourth, if you have some explanation and you make that explanation wrong by a promille, then you're still a huge energy. So then you're not at all at these levels of the 10 to the minus 11. So it seems to me that a true solution would at the very least have to involve everything, right? And that means that you first must start with the main problem, and the main problem is why in equilibrium the vacuum energy does not gravitate. Now, in this talk, I will give you a brief review of a particular approach to the main cosmological constant problem, and that goes under the name of this Q theory. That is what is in the title of the talk. And this is work that I've been doing over the last 3 years with Grisha Volovic in a tremendous, we were basically exhausted. And this is sort of the first paper, and this is the last paper, and there are several in between. I think that this last paper, it was also getting somewhat clearer to us and what we were going on, that is published in JETPL letters, and that is a good reference to see what we are discussing. It's not so long paper, and we really say why we think that we have a possible solution of the cosmological constant problem, the main cosmological constant problem. But I will only want to give you some of the basic ideas. I will not discuss this on detail, because I think that we have found a solution of the static problem, namely of the equilibrium case. It's a possible solution. I want to go further and discuss something that has to do with these fine problems, namely, why is this finite value, where does that come from? This is much less clear, I admit that. But I will do it in a slightly different way. I will do it in a time-honored way. I will make a prediction. So this is because, you see, these ideas of me and Grisha, they're all very nice. There's no problem. They're founded on condensed matter physics, so this is real physics. I think it is quite nice, but how do you know it's right? Right? The best way is that we make a prediction which is falsified or verified. Right? And this is why I discuss this TeV scale physics. Okay, and that is in later papers. That is the main paper with Volovic, where we have the idea of this so-called electroweak kick. That is something I want to explain to you. And this is a very detailed technical paper that has been aggravating me and the referee also. I'm already at the seventh version, and it is vastly changing. I hope it converges because I'm making a prediction of real numbers, right, for LHC. This is real numbers, and to get real numbers out, that is much more difficult than hand-waving orders of magnitude. Now, the outline of the talk is the following. I will tell you the basic idea of this Q theory. And I think this is a very nice idea, and I also think this may play a role. So I really think I have something interesting to say, but this will be relatively short because I've given many talks on this already. This is in the literature. There are review talks. Yeah, you just must read it if you want to know it. Then I will discuss in some detail this electroweak mechanism. So we have an electroweak mechanism that somehow would produce this small value. That is the idea. And I will start with a basic introduction, coup d'envoi, because we must be bilingual here, right? That means we kick off. And then I discuss this electroweak kick. And the basic idea, I think, is also very simple, and it may play a role here or there. I don't know, but I think it is very nice. Then I go in getting real numbers. This is more debatable, frankly, that I tell you. I have a sort of more Kepler approach than Newtonian approach. I try to find something that works. Kepler also didn't know why the planets were going around the sun. Frankly, Newton didn't know either why, but he knew how to describe it. So it is not trivial. And I will, just to make clear, I will recap it to really give you the main points of this mechanism now. And then it will be, what time, I don't know. Don't be afraid. Okay. So first let me give you this basic idea of what we call Q theory, where, with hindsight, you may even read for this little Q quintessence, but not the quintessence how it is known. So let's just call it Q. Now, our crucial insight is very simple, I think, with hindsight. That is the following. We say there is vacuum energy and vacuum energy. Now, if that is the case, then it is already good to be very careful with the notation. So let me be a little bit more specific. I say there is the vacuum energy density epsilon, which appears in the action. That vacuum energy density need not be the same as the vacuum energy density rho v, which appears in the Einstein equations. That is the basic idea. So it is possible that the normally we put these things all are put equal, and we think that may be missing the point. So our what we have found, and we will make this concrete, is that it is possible that the vacuum energy density that appears in the defining microscopic theory is not the same as the one that drives the Einstein equations. And that actually will be the crux of the solution. Now, how can this happen concretely? So let us consider the full quantum vacuum, which we don't know what it is, to be a self-sustained medium. And this is sort of a physical picture. I want to give you some feeling. Equations come later. But here, this is the basic idea. Some self-sustained medium, like, for example, a droplet of water in free fall. A droplet of water is a self-sustained medium, right? And let's suppose that our vacuum is also a self-sustained medium. Now, that is very nice, but it is then clear that that vacuum would need to be characterized by some type of conserved charge, right? Something really needs to define what is this kind of fluid, this self-sustained medium. And the basic idea then is that we can discuss the macroscopic equations of this conserved microscopic variable, that will later be my little q, even though we don't know the details of this microscopic theory. The idea is exactly the same as what happens with hydrodynamics. So the analogy is the following. The mass density in liquids, bottom line, we now know, describes a microscopic quantity. Namely, it has to do with the number of atoms, right? But this mass density obeys macroscopic equations, hydrodynamical equations, because of particle number conservation. See, if you have particle number conservation, I can go to larger and larger volumes, but it remains conserved. So that is why, for example, Euler and Navier-Stokes were able to do hydrodynamics, even though they did not know the Schrödinger equation, right? You need to have the right variable. This is the idea. So self-sustained medium, some type of conserved charge. If I have a conserved charge, then it makes sense to discuss macroscopic equations, even though I don't know the detailed microscopic theory. And think about hydrodynamics. That is the analogy. Now, this sounds very nice, but let's a moment. Do we think that the quantum vacuum is just like a normal fluid, like water? The answer is no. We absolutely do not think that, because the vacuum is Lorentz invariant. That is different. The vacuum is Lorentz invariant, and I just put some references down, because we have experimental limits, for example, in the photon sector, where Lorentz invariance has been verified to a very high degree of precision of 10 to the minus 15. So this is very tight results. We know that Lorentz invariance is a very, very precise symmetry of the ground state. Now, if that is the case, then it means that the standard type of charge density that we all know in quantum field theory courses is not the one that can help us, because that is the time component of a conserved vector current. I say time component. That already shows you that it's not Lorentz invariant, right? So that is not good. That is not good. So what we need is a new type of relativistic conserved charge. And that we will call this vacuum variable Q. That's the idea. So once more, in other words, we look for the relativistic generalization, that will be this little q, of the number density, little m, which characterizes the known material fluids. Right? So we are going to do, that is how we started out, with standard fluid dynamics, even standard thermodynamics, but Lorentz invariantly. That's the new thing. So we've done Lorentz invariant type of fluid dynamics. This is what we've done. We will discuss this later. So, but this is the idea. So we have this self-sustained medium. There's a conserved charge. But that type of conserved charge must be so that the equilibrium state is Lorentz invariant. So one more time, let me get this really straight, because it's very simple physics. A glass of water, this, now it is at rest, is not Lorentz invariant, because if I go through it, the density changes, I see actually this water bumping in my glasses, it's not Lorentz invariant, right? So that is not good, right? That is not our quantum vacuum. But we can still, I'm going to drink now some, we can still learn a lot from the thermodynamics and the hydrodynamics that we use to describe this water, but we do it slightly differently so that it is Lorentz invariant. This is the idea. Now, with such a variable Q, which depends on the position in space and time in general, the vacuum energy density of the effective action can be some generic function. I write it epsilon. So epsilon is a function of Q. I've not told you exactly what Q is. Frankly, we don't know what little Q is, but I will give you examples later. And that's actually just the one point that is often missed. This generic function may include a constant, lambda bare. So you have anything that contributes to the cosmological constant, it will go in lambda bare, and the rest contains functions of this variable Q. Right? So it's a generic function, but it includes a constant contribution, right? Lambda bare. Now, then it is possible to show in not much work that was done in our first paper that from thermodynamics and Lorentz invariance, I get this crucial relation too. I get that the pressure of this self-sustained medium is equal to minus this quantity. And actually, this pressure is equal to minus the density, energy density, by Lorentz invariance, right? Now, this first equality actually corresponds to the integrated form of the so-called Gibbs-Duhem equation. And this, I think, was the main insight of my friend Grisha Wolowick already. Before we started to work on this, he thought about the connection of the cosmological constant problem and the Gibbs-Duhem equation. But it was not entirely convincing, in my opinion. We have improved that. He missed his Lorentz invariance. This was the point. But the Gibbs-Duhem equation, the fact that the Gibbs-Duhem equation plays a role in the cosmological constant problem, that was first realized by Grisha Wolowick. I think that's a very important result, very deep insight. Just to remind you and me, what was the Gibbs-Duhem equation? In its simplest form, it says that n d mu, this is the conserved number, this is the chemical potential, is actually given by V dP, pressure, volume, minus entropy dT, right? If I have dT 0, I can write dP as proportional to d mu. If I integrate it, I have P then, and this is actually will be turn out to be mu, and we see that this is essentially the integrated form of the Gibbs-Duhem equation. That is what we find. I will come back to that later. Yeah. Not obvious. This is, if you had gone to my talk 2 years ago or so, I would explain this in more detail. It is not difficult. In our first paper, we discuss it in two lines. You derive
it. What is the thermodynamic Q?
Of which Q? The little Q.
Yeah.
It is the charge density. It's the analog of N over V. You see, this is N over V. N over V is Q. Then that I integrate becomes the mu, and this becomes the P.
Right.
So this is, but I will give you something later that is even much simpler to understand. This is how we discovered it. I give you later it with field equations. And in many theories, it's very general. So, but the insight that this is really, that the Gibbs-Duhem equation plays a role, that is a very profound insight, coupled with the idea that conserved charge must be relativistic. That's the crucial. Now, you saw that I had, now trying to go back. Yeah. In this energy density rho, there are two terms. Right? You see that this term, that is the one that will actually enter the Einstein equations, is not equal to epsilon in general. There's an extra term. But this shows you that the one vacuum energy density is not the same as the others. Right? the one that is thermodynamically active, and that is the one that will enter the Einstein equations also, is not epsilon, but it is epsilon minus Q the epsilon with U. That's the beautiful thing. So that is the main result. And now I have two terms, and in generally I can cancel two terms. Right? So it is possible for a generic function that is a value, a constant value of this variable Q, so that both terms cancel exactly. And we got started on this by a similar constant variable is actually known to play a role in condensed matter physics and solid state physics for the so-called Lakin-Pekin effect. So there are fields that are constant in space-time, but that lead to physics, right? And in particular, the Lakin-Pekin effect is something you have to do with phase transitions, measured in the laboratory, it's really there. That was pointed out to us by Poyev. Yes. So he has done similar things in string theory, where there are similar types of variables, but string theory up to now has not yet been verified in the laboratory. Lakin-Pekin effect has. So, this is great. We have solved the main cosmological constant problem in principle.
But you should add where this the equation is coming from, like square bracket is equal to zero. That's coming from the minimization principle, right?
Yes.
So I think that would be helpful if you...
Yeah, but not now.
Okay.
Yeah. And may I give you an idea? But this is just, it is an equilibrium condition. We have actually also a stability condition. We have discovered what is called the vacuum compressibility. There's a new quantity that characterizes this fluid, and it has to do with the compressibility, and that must be positive. And so there's a bit more here, but this is a brief introduction. The point is, this is great, I have solved it in principle, because there's one crucial question you could ask. You could say, this is all very nice, but is such a Q at all possible?
What about another question?
Many questions are possible. Yes, please.
One thing you emphasized is naturalness. You wanted a natural mechanism. So if you just say there is a Q naught,
right,
you haven't addressed the naturalness.
Very good. That's why this morning I stayed at home to add, I have an appendix. If you want at the end of the talk, I will show you that the Minkowski spacetime can actually arise as an attractor. We have found dynamics. But first, the idea, let's first understand the statics, then we do the dynamics, right? And I cannot do everything at the same time. So the statics, I believe, is in good shape. It seems to me that you cannot discuss dynamics if you don't know the statics. It would seem to me logical, right? So the statics is in good shape. The dynamics is work in progress, right? And there are many questions like that, and they are entirely valid, and we have worked on this, of course, right? So if you want, at the end of the talk, I have an appendix where I show you this attractor behavior, and that's sort of very nice. That's why I put it in this morning.
So are you saying that Minkowski is the only static solution, or...?
No, I've not said that. It could also be that the sitter is also... The sitter can also be an equilibrium solution. Could be, yeah.
Okay.
Could be.
Any of the sitter, or just...
I don't know everything.
Okay.
This then depends more on the detailed theory, right? Mm-hmm. And so I will give you examples of detailed theories, and then for Robert and you, I have an appendix in our overrun time, in football terms, right? So is it possible at all? And the answer is yes, we have examples. So this is actually what got us going 3 years ago, right? Because up to then, I thought the discussion was very nice, but very vague, right? And we have now examples, and with these examples, we actually discussed the dynamic questions, right? But this is the basic idea, and I hope that you have some flavors to summarize. So I think the Q theory approach to the main cosmological constant problem, why is lambda not these big energies, right, provides a solution. Now, I would say that for the moment, this is only a possible solution, right, because I don't know for sure that the beyond the standard model physics contains an appropriate Q field, right? I must introduce this field, right? So there is something new. Standard model physics alone does not solve this. And so this is a possible solution, But on the other hand, it's better to have one possible solution than no possible solution. Right? So that is also in that appendix of Robert. That has to do with the so-called no-go theorem. These scalar models all are no-go. That was proven by Weinberg. So it's also an interesting question, why does this evade the no-go problem? These are advanced technical. Yes, he does. Yeah, but, oh yeah, right. That is true, but that would be only from one side. Mukoyama has also worked on this, I think.
It's going to be from either side. Just a gently sloping linear potential that goes from minus infinity.
Right, and crosses zero at one time. And you must start on the right side. This is what I got.
Yes. Start wherever you like, as long as it doesn't evolve. If the slope is so gentle that it doesn't evolve, then you can start wherever you like.
Yeah, but it must evolve somehow, otherwise you don't get to the zero.
The scale will be enormous.
Yeah, but you must go to the zero. You must be at the zero, don't you?
No, the universe is only lasted 14 billion years. It's not a very long time.
Yeah, but why don't you have that? The Planck energy to the force? Where is my gluon composite energy here? So this is the point. You have your...
I take a linear potential, and I add any positive constant to it. It still crosses zero.
Absolutely true. So it's and the universe needs to be close to this crossing the zero.
Right, but it's the same with your one.
Not quite. But actually, as I say, I discussed this with Mukoyama, and he has worked with our own detail. And we did come together to the conclusion that his dynamical equations, you see, he has the instability. It would run away from the zero. And so you must start...
It could be an arbitrarily long time scale.
Sorry?
You can make that time scale arbitrarily long.
Yes, that's true, yes.
So,
yes, but the initial condition is special.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Is it not special in your case?
I don't think so. I will show you that in the appendix. Yeah.
Actually, you asked Neil's question about... In Neil's explanation, where's the vacuum energy? I was going to ask you exactly the same question.
Yeah, please. Where's the vacuum energy?
So now you take
it's
your
cancelled. It's adjusted.
I take your construction, and to that I add the vacuum energy.
Yeah. Yes, but then my view absorbs it.
No, but
yes, it's adjusted. But I could have, it was absorbed.
I could have said
you adjusted after the fact.
No. No, whatever constant whatever epsilon is a generic function, there will be solutions of Q that have lambda is zero. That's the only thing I'm saying for the static problem.
But you can say that with the bare cosmological constant too.
Yes.
You can say just take your matrix.
Right.
And then you have your
absolutely
true. Bare cosmological constant.
So that is true. So for the static problem, you could say that. And I would agree that this perhaps, I think, is a little bit nicer, but not much nicer, except that we can do more. And that is what we discuss now, right? Namely, to get the finite value. Right? Yeah, there's also this unimodular explanation of the cosmological constant, which is very subtle and possibly nice, and it can solve this main cosmological constant problem, perhaps. But not the other one, I think, right? And so then they must make predictions, and I make predictions, and we will compare it. Right? This is how things go. Huh? Still, even if I don't, that's why I'm relatively modest here. I call this a possible solution. I think that is correct. Do I say that there are no other possible solutions? No. Right? So that is, I think, quite fair. Good. Let's now move on to the remaining puzzles. This is much more debatable, namely, why is lambda not exactly zero? Now we have the physical understanding of that. Namely, our universe is not an equilibrium. Everything I discussed before was for equilibrium physics, statics. Now we know since Hubble that our universe is not in equilibrium. So that is clear, right? That it is not zero exactly. The question is, where does this precise value come from? And this goes under the name of the cosmic coincidence puzzle. And that is also true. These I would rather call puzzles. A problem is something aggravating and deadly. And this is something that our human understanding is rather limited. We would like to understand this puzzle. But if we don't understand it, life goes on, right? If the main cosmological constant problem is not solved. Life does not go on because there's no life, right? There's no universe. So that is a real problem. So these are puzzles. And I will now discuss a concrete realization of this Q variable, where the idea is that this would operate at very high energy scales per Planck, some ultraviolet energy scale. And in the very early universe, we have found that the equations show that this dynamic rho v goes to zero very quickly. And actually, Starobinsky et al. Has argued that with particle creation effect, it goes even faster than we thought. So it basically goes to zero. Then we have rho v zero, exactly. And what we have found is that if there is a sort of small change in the behavior of the expansion of the universe when the temperature was around the TeV, then our fluid is kicked. This is really physical. If I have a fluid in a box and I change the box, then the fluid does something, right? And it's the same with our kick mechanism. Now it is not this that is changing, but the expansion of the universe is changed, and then actually this vacuum energy density responds to it. And this is the core of this electroweak kick mechanism. That I will now discuss. Now, let me give you an explicit realization of such a variable, right? And that goes by the use of these so-called three-form gauge fields, which have been discussed already 30 years ago by Duff and van Nieuwenhuizen and Aurelia, Nicolai, and Townsend. And these were all people coming from supersymmetry, supergravity, right? And the idea is the following, that if I have the effective action of general relativity in the standard model, that I have a term, the Einstein-Hilbert term is R, I have a constant for the cosmological constant coming from all my fields, the zero-point energies, and I have all the fields in the standard model. This is sort of shortly written up. The idea is to replace this by a theory where... Is this then also a pointer? Doesn't work. Yeah. So the idea is that this constant that was 1 over Newton's constant is replaced by a function of Q. This constant is replaced by, let me say, another function, epsilon tilde, just to make sure that it's of Q. And the standard model I take over directly. In principle, all the constants of the low energy physics will be functions of the Q, because the Q describes part of the characteristics of the quantum vacuum. So it will enter all constants of nature, but here I have only done it in the gravitational coupling. So Q depends on K, this gravitational coupling constant depends on Q, and here I have my vacuum energy density epsilon tilde, and Q is now explicitly realized in terms of the three-form gauge field, and actually Q squared is proportional to F squared. And this is the idea. Now you see that Q involves A, and it also involves the metric, right? So this is the new point. This is our new point. This Q is not a fundamental scalar field. That is the crux. It is somehow very special. It is not absolutely fixed, but it has certain characteristics. So this quintessence, in a way, that is a very nice idea, but it's not a scalar field like it is. There is more structure in it. So you see, Q is then F squared, and that basically goes here. So here I have an effective action depending on the three-form gauge field, the metric, and all the matter fields, right? This is the theory that we have worked with. And then, actually, you can just do these equations, calculate the field equations, right? No thermodynamics. And you find in the Einstein equations there is a term that is proportional to g mu nu. And the term that multiplies g mu nu is not my epsilon tilde, but it is precisely this combination that you just get by working out the field equations. This I found 3 years ago. We found 3 years ago. And this is precisely what we got from the thermodynamics argument. Yes, please.
You also need
a boundary term for that. For here, let's do it in this way, that this is over Minkowski topology. Sorry, didn't I write that up? Yes, R4. Yeah, but that doesn't apply here. This is four dimensions. I have looked actually at that paper. There's nothing wrong with what I write up. If you want to make it more general, that is possible. So I think... Now, epsilon twiddle is an arbitrary function of q squared. Q squared, q to the 4th, q to the 6th, q to the 8th. The analog physical, the term q squared is like the Maxwell term, you see? So this is like the Euler-Heisenberg Lagrangian, right? But now not for a one-form gauge field, but for a three-form gauge field in four-dimensional space-time. This is the crux, right? And this was realized by these people, many other people. We refer to nearly all of them, I hope. Hawking also worked on this. And yeah, please. Could be. In principle, you could do it. But then you would not have that this value Q naught would not be different from zero. So it would not be a liquid in how we would understand it. So rather not.
dA?
Q equal to?
Rather than being dA squared with involving the metric, just take it as being dA.
Yeah, you mean as in sort of Chern-Simons-like.
Yeah. Well, that's not really Chern-Simons-like, but...
No, but in one dimension it would be. 1 plus 1 dimension is so, or 3 plus 1. Type what you want to do, you do it.
Okay, maybe you throw it in.
Now, let me think about this more. I think this is a little bit old already.
Isn't your field strength just proportional to the epsilon factor?
Yes, isn't it?
Yeah, so...
Right?
So
here?
What's the difference? I mean, why don't you just take that scale?
No, but that, and we also write it up. Look, this is a short talk. This is a seminar. We, in the papers, we write this in different ways. This is one way. This is not always... You can write explicitly f alpha beta gamma is proportional to epsilon for indices, some root g, right, in the right way, times q. That's the way. Good. But this is fine, too. Actually, I prefer it. So this is perfect. So in that way, q arises, and that is what was realized by Duff and you. That is how they wrote things up, right? This is how the solution was in flat space time. But the point is that there appears a scalar-like variable, and actually that is a variable that is a candidate for our variable q. And that's why I write it like q. And indeed, if you calculate just the variations, no thermodynamics, I get, and here are the equations, by the way, I get here this term. I get the term that is the cosmological constant term, and it involves not my epsilon tilde of the action, but it involves precisely this combination. That is the main point. And there's further equation, because I also have to vary A, right? I vary both A, I vary G, and of course I also vary the matter fields, right? They give the energy conservation equations. Important here is to see that these equations are generic. That is, they are independent of the scale and dimension of Q. You see, all that drops out, Q over Q, and here that is one of Q, one of Q, and that is zero. So these equations are generic. We have other realizations, for example, in this ether type of theories, and same equations. Right? So it's not a theorem, but these equations are not necessarily tied to this particular realization. This is the important thing.
So why couldn't you go to Einstein correct in the previous slide?
Yes?
Let's just get rid of your factor. Previous slide. Yeah, get rid of the factor k of q by rescanning the metric.
Yeah, you can do it. You can do everything. We do it. I've done all these things. There's all the papers in between. That's why we're there. These are equal to f of r theories. We've all worked with them. Yeah.
It's equal to what?
F of r theories. You can rewrite these theories. That is rather remarkable. This was pointed out to us by Stachowiczki. I didn't believe him, of course. But he was right, but only in particular. This is a whole discussion. And actually, we have something interesting to say about f of r theory. So in a way, you can view this...
But if it's equivalent to f of r theories, then it's equivalent to scalar field plus gravity.
Yes, standard f of r theory, but we have more terms.
How does it get around Weinberg's no-hook theorem?
That we discuss in the back. That was promised. So, mind you, it's not different. Okay, let me not. I get it at the end. So, now we have these field equations. I put in a flat FRW universe and I get my cosmological equations, right? This is straightforward. You see here, this equation is sort of the modified Friedmann equation, you see, h squared densities. This is something that comes out of this Maxwell equation. And now I put in two types of matter. I put a massive matter and I put massless matter. The massive I call type 1, the massless I call type 2. And so there are two matter type of equations. And for starters, I have a prescribed equation of state function that describes how this matter evolves. We discussed that. Now, it can be shown that these solutions have actually an analytic solution with the following properties. That if you start from a standard radiation-dominated universe, that solution has rho v is zero. That is a solution of the equations. It's not trivial. It's not trivial. If it is then perturbed, this expansion, by these massive type 1 particles at a time, say, corresponding to the electroweak energy, this is time, then this rho v actually is kicked away from zero. And if I later, these type 1 particles become again relativistic or they have decayed, then I have standard radiation-dominated expansion, I have again rho v is zero. So actually, the solution gives this kind of structure. The density, the vacuum energy density, is proportional to the Hubble constant, to the force, times this equation of state parameter. And this equation of state parameter, perhaps I skipped it over a little bit fast, this kappa m is zero for relativistic particles and is equal to one for non-relativistic particles. Right? So if I have relativistic particles, this is zero, rho v is zero. If the expansion is modified by mass effects, this is my analogy of this thing, mass effects affect this self-sustained medium, this fluid, then the vacuum energy density is kicked away. It is positive, actually, and it has this order of magnitude. But we have the analytic solution of it. So this has a peak value of the order of this Hubble time to the force, and that is this number. I will discuss that shortly. But as it stands, this vacuum energy density was zero and returns to zero. Right? That's it. So the standard non-dissipative dynamic equations of Q theory do not produce a constant value of the remnant vacuum energy density from the electroweak kick. That's how it is. But the point is the following, that we can argue, we have some physical arguments, that dissipative effects actually may lead to a finite remnant value. This is a much more delicate discussion, which is far from over. But if that is the case, then instead of going from zero back to zero, it would sort of rise here and then stay to some finite value. And the order of magnitude would be the height of the peak. And let's look at this number. That was precisely this Hubble time to the force. If you now work it out, you get this formula. If you put in a TeV and you put in a reduced Planck energy, which we must do here, then we find that that is milli electron volt to the fourth. And that is remarkable. This formula, This formula, namely that the cosmological constant would be given by the weak scale to the 8 over the Planck energy to the 4th, that was suggested already 10 years ago by Arcani, Ahmed, Hall, Kolda, and Murayama. They discussed this coincidence, and that's a very nice phenomenological paper, and they show that that would explain why the energy densities in matter, radiation, and vacuum would be naturally the same order of magnitude now. And that would be a possible solution of this cosmic coincidence. Only, as they say themselves, you have to assume this formula. They assume that, and as they honestly say in the abstract and in the paper, they do not understand that formula. right? There's an adjustment mechanism, which they do not know what it is, and they appeal to it. But this is precisely what we think we know. We have one possible adjustment mechanism, and then, indeed, we find from our equations that this peak has, indeed, this value. And that value is precisely of the order of the measured value. That is clear. Now, yeah. Sorry?
A question.
No, this, here, yes, it did, but this went ultra fast, that I admit. So let me try to backtrack. These equations are solved, right? And I find that I have a radiation dominated universe, rho v zero, then it is kicked by the mass effects, and by this kick, the rho v is changed. But if the kick dies out, then the rho v dies out with it. What we have is, we have modified equation. These I did not show you. It's based on something analogous processes in fluid dynamics. So we have an equation, and that actually has the same solution but with a plateau. And that is what we discuss in paper reference 4, I think, or so. And we have some physical discussion, and you can understand it as a time lag effect. So this is a question that if I have some external perturbation, I need to respond to it, and if I don't respond to that with infinite rapidity, I will be kept with it. And we have the exact analytic solution that shows actually this behavior. And that equation is an equation which is very similar to something that appears in so-called second viscosity. Mind you, I did not know much about these things either, but it's in London when you sheets to summarize. So we have an equation, phenomenological equation, that gives this precisely, and it is the analogy with second viscosity, dissipative effects. I could say give a whole seminar on that, but this is still an open problem how that precisely goes. As a matter of fact,
so just a question, so this plateau really goes to infinity?
Yes, it stays constant. Yeah. And it's very, so this is a very small value. At the moment when the temperature is TeV, the energy densities are TeV to the force. It's a very small effect. But because it stays constant, ultimately they come together, right? And that is now our acceleration. Right? This is the idea. Yeah. But as I say, these calculations are really in the infancy. That it is not in as good shape as the statics. That is clear. Because what I need to do, the quantum dissipative effects, I have only described phenomenologically. I have not derived them microscopically.
But in order to get the precise number, don't you need to do some amount of fine-tuning on a equation?
Nay. I'll discuss this a little bit later. So some other appendix, but sometimes, yeah. The question is how robust this is. Yeah. So
what do you pick for k and for q? And you have two arbitrary functions. What do you pick to get these results?
The k, the kappa, you mean?
In your action, you have two arbitrary functions.
Right. Oh, that's a good question. Yeah. We pick some, the simplest thing, a quadratic and a linear. And I've done something. It does not seem to depend on it, but the final answer absolutely does depend on that. Right. Yeah. Absolutely right. Yeah. So we have ansätze, the simplest we want to show is something possible. So for the vacuum energy, we just have a quadratic, which is a good approximation, I think. For the k, that is more subtle. I have only now used a linear function, but you perhaps want to use another function. It's work in progress. Right? Yeah, that would be a good question, actually. That's one of my students as well. So, let me see, now I'm getting lost myself a little bit. Yes, so we had, based on the analogy with second viscosity, we argued that quantum dissipative effects would perhaps lead to some time lag effect, and then I would not be able to drop to zero, but I would stick. And then I would be in business, right? This was a complete ad hoc equation, basically out of Landau and Lifshitz, right? What I have done is namely, is it possible to modify my original Q theory equations? Is it possible that I can modify them? And I've been able to find that. So, and that is what I say, this is in the spirit of Kepler. I have found a small modification of these ODEs that I've given you before that precisely leads to a remnant value. Right? That needs to be calculated later. Right? Good. Now, the details of these ODEs, numerical solution, I put somewhere at the end of the talk, we will never get there. But let's now focus on the physics implications. And I'm done in 5 minutes. Now, and so as I say, there are many questions still here, but let's go ahead. Let's say that the theoretical value of the effective cosmological constant is really given by this Arcani-Hammett formula, right? Then what really enters here is a number, just a number. If it is, for example, zero, then it doesn't work, right? And that number is the one that you need to calculate for some kind of ODEs. Some kind of equations need to describe that. I think I have found the simplest ODEs. But it may be all much more complicated, that is true. But I have something that works. Now, if I equate my theoretical value with the experimental value, then I actually get, I calculate what is the required value of this energy scale so that it works out. And now comes in the good point that this thing came to the 8th power, and so this only depends on the 1/8 power of my constant, right? And if I put in something like, say, that constant was 100 or so, then I get this number. And so this is a very nice formula. It involves Newton's constant. It involves the measured value of the cosmological constant now. And it gives then an energy scale for new physics, namely these massive particles. So there must be massive particles with masses of more than the TeV. And then perhaps this cake would work. If the masses are of the order of the standard model, it does not work. As a matter of fact, I think I can get an analytic bound that this number is less than 1. It is of order 1 or less, but it is not very much larger than 1. So if I can solidify that, this has a sort of physical idea behind it, then it would mean that this TeV scale, this new energy scale, is larger or equal than 2 TeV. That is what comes out. So this I am reasonably sure of. So assuming this makes sense, assuming the cosmological constant has this form, then I would say that the value of this mass scale, energy scale, is 2 TeV. Now actually, I want to make this more precise, and I've worked very hard on this to do it as well as possible. And I can give you a table. You don't have to read this. This is just to give you some idea. I had these type 1 particles and type 2 particles. Massive particles, massless particles. The idea is these massless particles are de facto the standard model particles, right? They are massless on the scale of TeV. Now, there are roughly 100 of them. Now, it is clear that this is so simple physics. What matters in this kick? It is, first of all, how many new particles there are and how much each one kicks, right? So what is the average mass and how many new particles are there? These are the two unknown quantities. So I can make a table with the number of new particles 1 to infinity, and actually this energy runs from 9 TeV to 3 TeV. So it's very shallow, very shallow. This is done a calculation where I had this function kappa m ad hoc. But during my discussions over the last months, it is clear that I could do something much better. I can get a physical model, so I can have a dynamic kick with really particles, massive particles, decaying and doing their stuff. And this is not an arbitrary function. And if I now take that there are hundreds of these new particles, this would be something like supersymmetry, right? That is the advantage of supersymmetry. So I now say something nice about supersymmetry. Then I would know that there are 100 new particles, roughly speaking. And then I have only one unknown, what is the average mass, right? So then the only thing that enters, this is the really crucial quantity, is this dissipative coupling constant. If it is zero, I go back to zero. So this is the quantity that needs to be calculated for microphysics. This is the unknown thing. But if it is of order 1, I have these values. And you see, these rows are comparable. This is with an ad hoc sort of kick, and this is a dynamical kick. So these numbers give you an idea, very roughly, of the systematic uncertainties. So large systematic uncertainties, but on the other hand, it is not 1000%, right? So this gives you roughly an idea. Now, let me summarize. Oh, let me recap this mechanism, because it's perhaps a little bit complicated. So I assume that there are massive particles with electron weak interactions. That is, they can be in equilibrium in the early universe, right? Then I know the energy density. So the presence of massive particles with electron weak interactions changes the expansion rate of the universe compared to that of a radiation dominated area. So it is changed a little bit. Then this change of the expansion rate kicks my vacuum energy density away from zero. And I'm only talking about the gravitating vacuum energy density, the vacuum energy density that comes in the Einstein equations, in the cosmological equations. Then I argue that quantum dissipative effects, if they operate at these times, they might or may not result in a finite remnant value. Right? This is open question. I can describe this phenomenologically with a modification of the cosmological equations. And if I play the game, then it looks like that the required values of this energy scale range, say from 3 to 15 TeV, depending on the effective number of new particles, and assuming this dissipative constant to be a 4 to 1. Right? Clear. I've said everything. Sorry, I did not understand. You talk very fast.
Sorry, what's special about the electric phase transition compared to...
Nothing special, except that it comes out right.
So
if I do something different, we also have a game at QCD. You don't get the milli-electron volt right. But a priori, you're right, the mechanism occurs always. So you can read for EEV whatever you want. If you have something that changes the expansion rate of the universe, away from radiation-dominated expansion, then this fluid responds, right? That is, I think, a nice idea. Good, let me summarize.
But one can object saying that if you have like God phase transition at some
right.
higher energy,
good
then you would get much higher vacuum.
Right,
yeah.
Right, we have a footnote on that. Yes,
yeah, okay.
Yes. So perhaps there is no God phase transition. Yeah. It can also be that if that is very close to the gravity, to the Planck energy scale, perhaps this is too naive. That could be. But I think that is a little bit of a cop-out. I think your argument is absolutely right, that if there are massive particles and I can use standard Einstein gravity, this would apply to phase transitions at very high temperature and would hold them out. Also, another question is what happens with inflation? I'm not going to discuss it. This is all very subtle. I think it is very subtle. And whether or not there's inflation, I don't know. Good. Let me summarize. Not too bad. Okay, so the main cosmological constant problem, why is the observed cosmological constant tiny on the scale of the energy scales that we know, right? I think we have a particular type of solution. One solution would be to have a particular type of vacuum variable, and that can give really exactly that the energy density is zero, and it adjusts naturally, I'll discuss this argument, in the equilibrium state. So in the equilibrium state. Much more difficult question is away from equilibrium. That's always in physics, right? And it can be that the finite remnant value may result from quantum dissipative effects operating in the early universe at temperatures of the order of TeV if there are no massive particles with standard charges, right? They should not be chargeless, and I don't know, but they should have standard charges. So, perhaps, supersymmetry, perhaps not, I don't know. And if that really works out, and if there is something of value in this suggestion, then I would say that the required value of this energy scale is several TeV, and it is clear that if that would be the case, that would imply new physics beyond the standard model, right? So, one more time, I will phrase it differently. I'm not predicting that there must be new physics. But I would say that if at LHC particles are found, say, with 700 GeV, 1 TeV, then I would say, aha, this is perhaps of interest. If LHC, after 10 years of working and still being funded, right? Luckily in Europe that keeps on going. If after 10 years they find no new particle up to 1.5 TeV, that is roughly what they can do, they say, if everything goes right. Then I would say this doesn't work, right? That doesn't work. Then I would say. So, and then you may, I will not turn back on it. I have actually another model to do it. But, so then this mechanism would not be the explanation. But one more time, if you hear that LHC has discovered not supersymmetry, but say new particles with masses of many hundreds of GeV, then you say, hey, perhaps there is a connection between that physics and the cosmological constant. That I think would be very interesting. Thank you for your attention. Are you the question, Mr.
Are you Justin? Saying that these heavy particles have to get their mass from the Higgs event?
No, not from it. No. Higher, because these are TeVs, right? So, honestly, you must view this broadly. Electroweak in the sense, not Planck energy, but around TeV. Right? That is what I call electroweak.
I thought you said there was some relation to the electroweak phase transition.
Yeah, originally we thought that, but that is not the germane point. Really, the point is massive particles in equilibrium around in a sufficient number and masses of several TeV, then I could, in the best of all worlds, explain the cosmological constant, right? The value. Also, the prediction is that the lambda CDM model would perfectly fit all cosmological observational data. What we would have gained as theoretical physicists is to have calculated the value, 10 to the minus 29 grams per cubic centimeter, we would have calculated that, and following Arcaniha methadone, perhaps explain this coincidence, right? Related with dark matter, and there would be a connection here. It would be the TeV scale.
These particles could have a big impact on electroweak precision observables, couldn't they?
Could, or could not, yeah. Yeah, but say several TeV, I think that is still allowed. Yeah, but that would be also a very interesting connection. You see, anything...
It depends on the strength of their interaction.
Yeah, but I told you, if I want to play this game, they should have typical interactions. Huh? So, all governed by alpha, roughly speaking. So, so that's a very interesting connection, yeah. Yeah, but up to now, say several TeV would be okay. Yeah.
How does your function k of q, go back to your Lagrangian,
right.
How do those functions change over the history of the universe? I mean,
the q changes. The q changes.
Yeah. So I just want to know by how much k and the other.
Very little. Yeah, you mean the relative change. Very little, the 10 to the minus 60, relatively. So we are very close to equilibrium. This is our point.
So about the evolution.
Yeah, no, but even with your evolution at the TeV scale, it's still peanuts. Compared, if I think that the fundamental physics is, say, Planck energy, right? And I have the TeV, then my Q variable has this hierarchy in it. So it is very unsensitive. And this was in our first paper, actually. We discussed that if you have later changes with phase transitions, they are compensated by the Q changing things like 10 to the minus 60. They can completely compensate, say, for an electroweak phase transition. So they're very small changes, and that feeds into very small changes of the fine structure constant. Normally, these things are very dangerous that I'm doing here, right? But we have actually checked in an earlier version that all existing, so we have a model where this Q also goes to zero. It is rapidly oscillating. And you might sort of worry about that. And it is consistent with all solar system bounds, and also I had a student work out with the binary pulsar bounds. So it is consistent with experimental data. I hope.
Let me ask another question. I mean, you've got this four-form field,
yeah,
whose value is let's see, if I had a simple Lagrangian for f squared,
right.
then the equation of motion would be df equals zero.
Right.
That implies f is a constant.
Right.
And epsilon mu zero. Okay. So in the simplest Lagrangian,
right.
the equation of motion tells you f is just a constant.
Right. Well, I have to.
You have an equation of motion which tells you it changes.
Yeah, but that comes.
So what causes the change?
What is very
what
important?
Is the source?
So well, good question, good question. Good question.
What is the jfq? Is not a constant.
Yeah.
Name
Stop.
A three form.
It's a good question. May I answer?
Please.
We know that the vacuum energy density in standard GR cannot change because of energy momentum conservation and the Bianchi identities, right?
Yeah.
So the crux is really that this K, this constant multiplying R, has some dependence on the Q. And that is what feeds in.
That's all.
That is the crux.
So what we're saying is you're just changing units constant.
Yes, well, what I say more precisely, or what we write, is that this is a Brans-Dickey type theory, but the scalar field is not fundamental, and there is no kinetic term. Right? That is the connection with Brans-Dickey theory. So in that sense, it ties into a lot of work. Lee!
These are questions you've already answered just so quick. How many degrees of freedom canonically does A have?
In this A?
Yeah.
Now,
zero.
That's a good question.
Zero.
But you must be careful. You must be careful. In Minkowski spacetime, it would be zero.
Right.
But there is more to physics than Minkowski spacetime, for example.
Oh, good. So it's a topological field. So it's one.
Right.
One for all of space
right.
and time, or one for all of space?
No, both. For spacetime. The Q would be constant over space-time, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is the original idea, and you see, I think the closest who got to what we think is the answer is Hanau and Teitelbaum. They got very close, but what they had not realized is that they should, instead of a quadratic, they should use a general function. Because if you have a quadratic, you could only cancel one sign of the lambda there. If I have a generic one, I can cancel both signs. So in that sense, what we do, it is practically nothing more compared to what was done 30 years ago, except that we have a bit physical insight, and that we have pushed it further, I think. So it is indeed a Brans-Dickey type theory for a non-fundamental scalar field. In this explicit example with the four form, we have really looked at not Minkowski spacetime, but at an evolving universe.
So now I'm confused. If the thing has no local degrees of freedom, then isn't there a gauge? Can't you use the gauge freedom in the A's just to remove any variation?
Whatever you want to do, I get physical answers out of it, and they are gauge independent, right? So this answers your question.
I'm confused. So let's not settle that. Okay.
So forget all these subtleties. This is a field. I have field equations. I solve them. I get energy densities out. Energy densities are gauge invariant, and there is something going on, right?
Field strength is gauge.
You are saying Q is a contrary value. Entire history of the universe, Q.
No, it's not.
Okay, so now explain how it changes.
This is independent. I give you some examples. Yeah.
So you've got a four form.
Right.
And DF.
That's just an example, by the way. Huh?
Fine.
Let's
talk about the example.
I like it too because it's concrete.
DF is the equation of motion of F.
Well, there is no DF.
Source.
So it's four dimensions.
That just doesn't change. You're telling me Q changes?
Wisdom.
So F must change.
Yeah.
So what is DF? What is the source term? There must be a three-index anti-symmetric thing.
Go backwards. This is already much more complicated than solving the universe. Here you have it. These are the equations, you see?
Mm-hmm.
There I have my D. This is an equation. If I multiply this AB with Q dot, I get on the right-hand side rho V dot.
Mm-hmm.
Right? On the left-hand side, I have K dot. Right? These are the equations. That is what is solved. And I can show you some results. We've calculated this in total. So Q changes, roughly speaking, from a value that is, say, Planck energy squared away from the equilibrium to the equilibrium value. And it approaches it very rapidly. But I promised somebody else to show that, so
okay. Could you go back to the Lagrangian? Because Lagrangian is just expressed in terms of f.
Right.
So,
but
if I calculate df, what is on the right hand side? It has to be something non zero, and there's frankly nothing in the Lagrangian that could appear there. And that means f is a constant.
F is not the fundamental field. I vary a.
True, but
this is a Maxwell equation.
Yes,
so right?
What is the equation of motion for f? That's
that I have here. Let me try to go. Oh, God.
Sorry.
This is the equation, but there's one in between, actually. So I've done a little bit of massaging. This is the equation for f. I get.
Sorry.
Oh, I solved it. Yes, yes, yes. Sorry.
Just point on the board, because I can't see your computer.
No, it's not here. Okay. I've not shown it.
Okay.
It's in our second paper. I have the equation for f. I give the exact solution and get this out. And I'm not trying to write this on the blackboard. I can look it
the
up.
The equation for f does have a source.
Yes, yes.
With some of your three index anti-symmetric.
Hey, the equation for f, I can do it this way. Hang on.
Okay.
Roughly, roughly. So this is something. No, there's no source.
There's no source.
But now comes in the epsilon. This is the thing. That is the thing. And there are more things that come from q. There's also a term here.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is that this one solution that we have, or is the solution, whether or not it's unique, I don't know, but. I think it is. We say this is a constant, and we call that constant mu, it's chemical potential. And that constant I have massaged out of these equations. You see, I've written specifically the isometric in give. They are not exactly this. I've done a step. Because, there's time reasons. But we've gone through this. And, absolutely right. So we solve, I have solved the Maxwell equation. I could solve that analytically. And in that way, I've gone further. Now, I will now show you one little thing on these two questions that we got on board.
Are you sure you have?
Let me try to find.
Are you sure you have identified the cosmological constants correctly?
Yes. Yes.
How do you do that?
I do that in the following way.
How do you define it?
I define it. That's a good question. It's the one that drives the Einstein equations, g mu nu, r mu nu, blah, 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 and it's the whole term that multiplies g mu nu. That I call the vacuum energy density.
But that looks a bit suspicious to me, because you're not an Einstein frame.
That doesn't matter. I can change these frames. That is not, I don't care. Physics doesn't matter of that.
The definition of lambda depends on.
Sorry?
I mean, the way you define lambda.
Yeah, the way how I define it, but the ultimate physics, if I get ultimately Minkowski space time out, or in the Sitter space time, that is different.
This can be conformal frame dependent. So, just slightly worried. But if you started off by.
No, it may be that perhaps you're right that we need some further input from a microscopic theory that would sort of tell us, fix it. I will think about that. Yeah. Maybe I have to answer the previous questions and end of my talk. So, two remarks. Excuse me. One, so I have given, in the static case, a type of adjustment type of solution of the main cosmological constant problem. Now, there is a so-called Weinberg no-go theorem, in quotation marks. It's not a real theorem, but he says that basically that is not possible. He rarely says that is not possible with the fundamental scale. And our equations, we have understood completely why it works for our case. And that is something very beautiful, and that was first pointed out by Dolgov. Namely, that we are interested, not the fields are not constant, are zero, or constant, but the derivative of it is constant. So our equations are easier to satisfy then the equation for a fundamental scalar field, and there's no problem with the Weinberg no-go theorem. So that was one question. Now the next question was, I think, from Robert, namely that if I have the static case solved, then you say, okay, that's at least nice to solve the statics, but how do you get there dynamically? Right, that was sort of the question, right? Now, that is, of course, a much more difficult question, but one possible way to do it would be the following, to realize that Q theory is not the final answer to everything. It is really the correct description of the equilibrium state. But you saw from my example already that if I go to the dynamics, there is more than this little Q. It's really this tree form or some ether type of field. And we've worked with ether type theory. And actually, now I'm going to give you an ether type realization. So in a realization of the vacuum variable through an ether type velocity field, that was first looked at by Dolgov and also a lot by Jacobson later, there is actually an asymptotic solution, and you can work it out. Yeah, you don't have to look at all these things. And basically, I get field equations, this equation 14. They're very simple equations. This V says something on one component of this velocity field, the time component. The space components are zero, and this little h is a rescaled Hubble parameter, right? Now, what you can then see is that we find this behavior. And this is a very nice result, I think. I'll explain you what is here plotted. So this, the idea is that for all different kind of boundary conditions in a certain domain, right, I find the following. Now, what do I plot here? I plot here the logarithm of the time in, say, Planck units. So this goes from 1 to 100. And I have rescaled things a little bit, so that here I don't rescale, because tau is zero, yeah? So this, I just plot this V component, and you see there are four types of boundary conditions. V can be here, it can have a positive slope, a negative slope. V can be here, it can have positive slope, negative slope. It evolves, and when I go to large T, then actually I have rescaled it with 1 over T, so I go to a constant over T. The value of this constant must be unique to get Minkowski spacetime. That would be my Q naught that I had before. But I don't put it in. The equation finds it dynamically. So I really get here that this ether component, ether field component, goes to 1 over dimensionless time. And that 1 is precisely what corresponds to my Q naught in my discussion. But here it comes out dynamically. If I change this cosmological constant to arbitrary value, it all moves around. This is completely stable. Here you see the corresponding Hubble expansion. You see here, I plot here tau times h. So this has constant h, that is like a de Sitter phase. But it is turned around and it goes to h, goes to 1 over tau, and that ultimately approaches Minkowski spacetime. So here we find for this particular theory, which is possibly pathological, I'm willing to, it's most likely a pathological theory, but okay, it shows that the required Minkowski value from the statics arises dynamically. So at least that is possible. And to put it even better, Minkowski spacetime really appears as an attractor for this theory, right? Whether or not this theory is okay, I don't know, but this would be the idea that this value that I get from the statics, it could arise dynamically. Whether or not it does, I don't know, right? Yeah.
I remember in the beginning of your talk, you start from the thermodynamic and normal invariance,
right,
and you calculated the pressure, and you get the equation of state equals 2 minus 1.
Right,
minus 1.
Yeah,
equation of state. So, but as I know, sometimes the pressure in thermodynamics doesn't equal to the pressure in cosmology. So I'd like to ask you, does the pressure you calculate equals to the pressure in cosmology?
I've lost you a little bit, but I will give some answer that involves pressure. The pressure there was basically, I have a sort of, I think, this thermodynamics discussion. You might want to read our first paper, that section. It discusses simple thermodynamics. I take a chunk of this medium and I look what it does under external pressure, right? So that P is really the external pressure. But in equilibrium, it becomes equal to the internal pressure, right? That is precisely equilibrium. You're right that in a dynamic situation, I don't do that. But I don't do that, that's why I solve the field equations, right? So this was just to give you some feeling, I hope, for the equilibrium case. But I cannot, look, statics is not dynamics. I'm not saying that, right? But it helps to know the statics. This is my point. So why do we do statics? In order to know what the variables are. That is the idea. And then I have some realization. Most likely I find equations that are generic. This would be the idea. And these I can solve. But detailed questions, like the microscopics and perhaps Niels' frame, they would ultimately tie to the microscopic physics, right? Somehow this microscopic must go in. That is clear. And also, I only have this Q, but there are many more variables possible. So this Q is just one variable of many that characterize the quantum vacuum. It is special in the sense that in the equilibrium case, it is constant. And that is what I mean by conserved. And it must be a little bit, in the beginning, we confused people mightily with this conserved. So that's what I mean. In the equilibrium, I have a solution where this vacuum variable is constant in space and time. Right? And there we can do some thermodynamic arguments, but the dynamics there, I don't do this Gibbs to them anymore. That's not correct, by the way.
So I propose we start now. So if there are any more questions, you can continue the informal discussion.